We are here today with Russell Carey, Executive Vice President for Planning and Policy at Brown University. Could you explain more behind the impetus of the 15-month celebration for Brown's 250th?
We actually spent a lot of time thinking about how long it should be. So, and part of that started by more than 3 years ago, looking at what other schools had done. We particularly visited Princeton, which had had a major anniversary in the early 1990s, Yale, which had a significant anniversary in 2001. To get a sense of what they had done. We looked at what Brown had done at the 150th and particularly at the 200th, which some of the people involved in the planning were students at that time. And also thinking about really moments to commemorate. March of 2014 is 250 years from when the charter was first approved by the Colonial General Assembly, so the predecessor legislative body before independence. Actually, was more than a year before a student first enrolled. So the charter was approved in March of 1764. The first student didn't start until September of 1765. And it was even sometime after that that the charter was actually finally formally approved because it involved going back and forth to England. But the charter being signed by the citizens and the leadership of the colony seemed like a good moment to start with, and that's what had happened at the Bicentennial. In terms of carrying it on for 15 months, I think really the goal there was this is a significant event. You know, it's something that you obviously would only celebrate every 50 years or so, and also to include two commencements. And so there's more opportunities for reunion classes and graduating classes and then a breadth of events. There are lots of things. You know, there's some of these big events like we just recently had with a launch weekend and a weekend in September. But then there are also lots of exhibits and programs and lectures that faculty and departments are doing that need time both to plan and then to be sort of spread out so they're not all competing with each other in 1 week. So those are the thoughts behind it.
How would you respond to recent criticism surrounding the price tag of the event, most notably the fireworks and the cake?
I think I would go back to what I said previously, that it's a significant event. You know, I think if an institution was doing something like this every year, I think that would be excessive, you know, even every 5 years. But every 50 years, every 100 years for a really notable celebration like that. And I think if you just look at this last weekend, part of the goal, because it was really focused on the founding of the university, and the founding of the university was very much a Providence, and in particular Rhode Island event. It's probably even better to say Rhode Island because it wasn't going to necessarily be in Providence. The first 6 years the college was in Warren, Rhode Island. But it was very much the leadership of the colony deciding that there should be a colonial college. If you actually look at the charter, there's some language at the beginning that talks about how there are other colonial colleges that are beneficial to those colonies, so essentially Rhode Island should have one too. I should back up and say that over that 250 years, we still have deep roots in Providence, Rhode Island. It's become a much different institution, really. It's an international institution with a very different breadth. That being said, part of the goal of the launch weekend was to really try and reconnect even more effectively with Providence, Rhode Island, and welcome people to the campus. So the event that on Friday that brought over 300 middle school students to campus, many of them had never been to Brown before. Many of them, they'd never been invited to Brown before. And I think they were really amazed by what was here. And maybe that opens, you know, their eyes to something that's available to them in a way that hadn't before. Certainly of the 5,000 or so people that participate in events, a lot of them were from campus, but a lot of them were from off. And so investing in that, I think, is very valuable. There are reasonable questions about spending money on things like that, certainly. But I think most of the feedback that I've heard and we've heard has been how much people enjoy having a communal event like that, because that doesn't happen at Brown very often.
So what are you most excited about the upcoming celebrations in this 15-month span?
I think over the next year and a half, the opportunity to engage lots of people with Brown. I mean, I think that there's a lot to share that you just don't necessarily always see, even if you're on campus. I think people get so wrapped up in what they're doing, they have no idea what's happening in the next building. Opportunities that people, faculty, students, or staff are taking to show their work, to exhibit their work, to really talk about what's happening at Brown with a broad audience, I think, is really very exciting. It's much more important than just celebrating an anniversary. It's really, part of the public mission of an institution like this is to say what's happening here and how it's beneficial to society. I think that's a real opportunity in this celebration.
It transitions nicely into our next question. You graduated from Brown in 1991.
That's right.
And you've been part of the Brown community in some sense ever since as alumnus and administrator. Right. What kinds of notable changes have you personally seen since then?
Right. So I think the biggest one, and it's in all three student bodies, so undergraduate, graduate, medical, is how much more diverse the student body is. And, mm-hmm. and the faculty and the staff to a certain extent too, but not as much as the students, which I think is something that, you know, is certainly a priority to continue to really aspire to. It was a good place 30 years ago, but I think it's an even better place every year. A large part of that is, you know, the different life experiences and perspectives that students bring who come here, and then the things that they do while they're here. I think it's, people in my class and almost every class will say they couldn't get in today, and whether that's true or not, I think what it really recognizes is that, you know, students are just doing much more. Number of students I hear from who are, you know, spending their spring break abroad doing something related to the research and or starting a business or engaged in who knows what. It's just pretty, you know, constantly amazing to me. So it's a little bit bigger, a little bit more complex than I think it was when I graduated. But the spirit is still the same. I think the idea of an institution that attracts people who want the freedom the curriculum provides. And then not just for students, but that happens in other ways too. I think that you see that in faculty, you see that in graduate medical students in different ways. And that's, you know, value that I think hopefully will endure for another 250 years, but certainly has endured in my experience around.
Nice. And then finally, could you speak in more detail to recent strategic policy goals of the university, mm-hmm. especially with Christina Paxson's most recent unveiling of her strategic plan?
So I think that the plan that the president's put forth for, you know, roughly the next decade or so, because that's sort of the time period that we think of institutional planning, very much builds on the foundation of the previous 10 years. So I think, you know, she really has said this, that the investments that were made in President Simmons' administration under the plan for academic enrichment has, you know, really sort of set the stage for further excellence, basically. You know, so the fact that the faculty has been expanded by over 100 positions, the fact that mm-hmm. NEET-blind admission still more room to grow in terms of being competitive with regard to financial aid, but the fact that we are NEET-blind was a major step to take. So, you know, I think that over the next 10 years, one of the objectives is to really more aggressively support areas of great strength and across disciplines too, so that the places where, you know, a really concentrated focus of resources in the School of Engineering, for example, or in the humanities or in other areas in performing arts, which is a major focus of planning studies right now, could really bring ground to a new level. You know, I think that performing arts in particular came through in the committee that I chaired about space needs at Brown, that there's this. And this is a great example of student sort of entrepreneurial activity. There's all these different performing arts groups, both in academic departments and not, really functioning, barely any support in terms of facilities. I mean, I think there's certainly been some improvements, particularly in the Granoff Center and some areas in music, but orchestra does not have a space to either rehearse or to perform that's suitable to the level that they perform at. And benefits of that are not just orchestra. Students who are in, or most of the students who are in the orchestra are not music concentrators. They're mm-hmm. neuroscientists or engineers or English majors, but they want to have a good music experience in addition to their Brown education. Investing in that area potentially could have benefits to recruiting even better students than we currently are. So I think basically my feeling is that there's a lot of opportunity. It will require a lot of fundraising and resources to achieve these goals, but they're good goals, and I think they really reflect the desires and the priorities of the community.
Great. Well, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.